You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tilinski and Wes Boss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Syntax. With me, as always, as Scott Tilinski. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, I'm doing super good. We just had a ton of fans. We had both sets of in-laws. My parents, Courtney's parents, are both staying at the house, and we do not have the accommodations to support that many people. So it was tight quarters, but it was just a lot of fun to have everyone in town. Got to see a bunch of family, and yeah, it was just really nice to have everyone out here. How about you? How are you doing?
Doing good. It's super nice out here. It was weird. Like in April, we had like a weird freak snowstorm, and then in May, we've had like temps that are like it was 35 here the other day. Let me convert that to American.
That would be cold. Cold here. Is that cold there?
Was 35 is 95 Fahrenheit.
So that's not cold.
It's very hot. It's been like smoking hot the last couple of days, and I've been loving it. We're going up to a friend's cottage this weekend, and I can't
wait. Sick. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So today we are talking all about, what are we talking about today? We have a potluck going down today. So we try to do these potlucks once a month where we take your questions and we just talk about smaller things, because a lot of times we want to talk about stuff that doesn't fit into a huge show. And we often get a lot of questions from you. So hopefully we can rattle through, I don't know, 6 or 7 different questions and touch upon a whole bunch of different topics.
This episode is sponsored by FreshBooks, which is excellent cloud accounting software, and Coffee Cup Software, which has made an amazing CSS grid tool. So for anyone working with CSS grid, which should be many of you by now because it's so excellent, you're going to be totally blown away by this awesome tool software that they've put together. So we'll talk about more about these sponsors later on in the episode. So let's get into it. What is the first item in the potluck today, Wes?
All right, this one is from Andy Boy the Kid. The question was, what is the best resource for staying up to date with browser-related JavaScript, i.e. any new or changing DOM APIs? I like this question because often what happens when these browser APIs are sort of in the proposal stage, I don't really care about them all that much. But once they hit the browser, either in stable or they are in sort of a proposed state, what I'll do is when a new version of Chrome comes out, or Firefox does a fantastic job at this, whenever they release a major version, what they do is they detail all of the things that are new in the browser, and some of that stuff is user interface, but they do often have a section on JavaScript, and that will detail these are the new browser APIs that are available to the general public, and these are the new browser APIs that are available under a flag. You might need to go in and turn those on. And at that point, it's like, oh, never heard about that, never heard about that. Then I can go in and do a little bit of exploratory. And then if it's something that is useful or something that will be useful in the coming years, I'll usually turn that into a hot tip on Twitter.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's a great tip. I mean, because that information is made available. You just got to go looking for it. It'd be nice if there was like a, I don't know, maybe there's something like this exists. If you know of this, like tweet it out at us, like a blog that just would just only release those JavaScript part release notes or something like that. Like just so you could have that all in one central place anytime anything comes out. I'm not sure. But yeah, I would be interested in that if it exists. Yeah, next. So let's go have another question here. Let's grab one. Let's say, how do you stay motivated if you don't like your current project? And this is from Michael Hoffman. The answer to
that's a good question.
It's a good question. And it's one that we've answered in kind of different ways before on the podcast when we're talking about some maybe other things, but maybe not directly. So how do you stay motivated if you don't like your current project? And I have a lot of experience with this because when I was working for the University of Michigan, we were getting a lot of projects that it was essentially an internal agency. So internal companies or internal sections of the university would have to bid for projects. Now, unlike a normal agency where the companies that are bidding for these projects are all somewhat exciting companies, this was all just a department in the University of Michigan. So I had a ton of projects that I just did not have a great time doing because they were just so boring, right? All the content's boring, the layout's boring, everything's boring about it. And there's not too much you can do about it because that's what the client wants and that's what the website's supposed to be. So for me, I was always taking an opportunity to make it more fun for myself. For instance, you know, take a project and learn something like a SAS or stylus with it, right? Because the end result of the project does not matter what, you know, as long as the thing works and it amounts to specifications, nobody should be getting in your way to say that, hey, you can't try this or you can't try that, as long as it doesn't affect the outcome of the project or take up too much of your time. But I would work on things like maybe developing a new design system for myself or new tools for myself to make the whole project faster. But either way, I would take it and try to build in ways to either make it more of a learning experience for me technically, like if creatively the project wasn't exciting, and maybe make it a more technical challenge, right? Have you always been using a jQuery or a built-in JavaScript slideshow? Hey, try building your own for this project. You know, you could take someone else's source and use it as a roadmap. But either way, find little things about the project that you can now work on to make it more challenging for yourself. And in turn, more challenging will make it more fun.
I think that's really good advice. And I think also if you are maybe thinking about this in not in terms of like a work project, but in terms of a personal project, I think that there's a lot to be said for just doubling down and actually finishing stuff. So if you have a personal project, and like I often look out and I see people who are like putting out like incredible amounts of content, and you go like, how is it that you are releasing so much stuff? And I've talked about this before, but it's because those people are actually finishing the stuff that they work on. And the last 10% of the project is always it's so hard to finish projects like that. It's always so tough to get through that last 10%. And by the time you get there, you're just about ready to be done with it. But I say like that's probably a really good skill to have as a web developer, is being able to push through that last 10%. That's really, really hard. Just become a little bit more mentally tough and be able to finish things, because that's going to make you a 4X developer, or I don't know what sort of X developer you can become, but definitely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This one's from Aron Krutov. Let me know if I actually pronounced your name correctly. The question was, what is your favorite music to work to? And I can tell you it's definitely not Drake.
That's surprising considering where you're located. I thought he was like the national artist.
That's Nickelback, but something about Drake that I just cannot stand it. I listen to all kinds of music, and I would encourage you to follow me on Spotify if you're interested in it. But I would say most of the music that I listen to is what is called hardcore or metalcore. I've got a playlist on Spotify called Retired Scenester Metalcore, because I know that I think about 80% of web developers are just retired band members or roadies or something like that. So I listen to that a lot. I've been really into, do you know who Nia Houston is?
Yeah.
Scott?
Yeah.
He's like this.
For the audience who doesn't know, he is like a prodigy skateboarder. At this point, no, he's like what? He's got to be in his like mid-20s or something. But he came up in skateboarding when he was like a little tiny kid with dreadlocks. And his story is actually really fascinating. There's a documentary on Netflix called Motivation about him. But yeah, he is amazing. He is maybe the most incredible skateboarder.
Yeah, he's unreal. And he came out with a new video. He skates for Nike, and he came out with a new video called Till Death. And it's gnarly as hell. And the music that he skates to is awesome. It's like kind of like it's rap, which I don't listen to a whole bunch of rap, but there's a playlist of all of the music from his skate video called Nia Houston Till Death. And it has got some bumping tunes on there.
Bumping tunes.
Yeah. What about you? What kind of music do you listen to?
It's all over the board for me. I listen to a ton of rap music. Hilariously enough, one of my favorite things to listen to is the 3-6 Mafia while I'm programming. I really like the new Janelle Monáe album. My favorite sort of like punk is this Jeff Rosenstock. I pretty much love anything that Jeff Rosenstock's putting out. My music tastes are sort of all over the board. I like good stuff. I also really like listening to music and like sort of dance at my desk too. So like Zapp and Roger, where you got a little bit of talk box and sort of like 1970s funk music that I would be breaking to. I don't know. My rap music tastes are sort of all over the board too, because I like some modern stuff like Kendrick and Young Thug and like, I don't know. I like a lot of random ass stuff, but I also like some really random rap music, like this guy Apache, who was on the Flavor Unit, which was Queen Latifah's group. He's a sort of a periphery member of this, like, sort of. Yeah. And I could listen to Apache released one album, and I could listen to that album over and over and over. You might, those of you who might know him from his hit track Gangsta Bitch that came out in the 90s. So yeah, pretty much anything golden age rap music, modern rap music, I don't know, as long as it's good, whatever. I have a Level Up Tuts rap playlist on Spotify too, so if you Google Level Up Tuts rap music or something, I believe it's there.
Oh man, I need to check that out. Actually, there's a couple more here that I've just been, I have a bunch of music that I listen to over and over when I'm coding, just because it helps me get into that flow state. Levi the Poet, who is, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of, some of his stuff sounds like rap, some of his stuff sounds like folky. I don't know, it's all over the place, but it's all spoken word, but to some really good music. I'm a big fan of that lately.
Nice.
Check it out. All right, what's your next question for us?
Next question. All right. So this is a more technical one. In what order should developers learn tools and libraries related to GraphQL? So in my mind, I guess this question, you know, you could think, this is by Mark Volkman. So in my mind, the first step for GraphQL anything is to just play around with graphical. For those of you who don't know, graphical is this really nice interface for playing around with an API. You should be able to find graphical interfaces on any sort of GraphQL API sort of websites or documentations. And it's this interface that allows you to build the queries and see the results and basically hit real time, modify them. One of the cool things about this tool is it gets you hyped for GraphQL. You can see just how easy it is to build these queries and why this thing is so cool with this system. So in my mind, you'd want to just test out graphical first. Next, you want to understand the core concepts of how GraphQL itself is just sort of a specification, right? Not a technology or a library, whatever. And then you have your different libraries. So then you understand, hey, okay, now we have these different libraries. So at that point, you'd want to pick one, whether it's Relay or Apollo. I think Apollo is easier for beginners. I think Apollo is a little bit easier overall anyways. So I would pick Apollo and then just try just Apollo client. There's a lot of APIs out there that are open to play around with. So you can play around with one of these APIs that already exists with Apollo client. And then from there, you can go on to writing your own Apollo server and stuff like that. And then you can get into a lot more of the additional libraries around Apollo or GraphQL overall.
I think one other thing I'd add, like I totally agree with all that. And one other thing I would add is just go to graphql.org and click on their learn. Almost always, I don't recommend going to like the spec website for a language just because it's almost always over people's heads. But graphql.org has an awesome introduction to what GraphQL is, specifically because there's going to be a whole bunch of new concepts that you're going to need to learn with GraphQL. You have queries and mutations and fragments and fields and directives and variables and all of these like new things that you need to learn about before you can actually use it. And I found that if you spend 10-20 minutes reading through the documentation on the learn section of graphql.org, it's going to really help you kind of talk the talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
This one is from Ishan Mathur. I think I got that one, maybe. I am comfortable with JS, in brackets, Node, on the server. Is it a good idea to learn other languages like PHP or Python? So I often get this email or Twitter DM or Instagram DM all the time where people tell me their life story and then they say, should I learn X, Y, or Z? And at the end of the day, I'll tell you, like, first, it depends, meaning that It depends on what you want to work on, what different types of projects that you work on. If you get a job that is in PHP, then obviously, yes, you're going to need to learn PHP. Or if you want to find yourself, you find in your area, a lot of the job postings are in Python, or maybe you work in a specific industry where that's like the language. So really, it depends. And I also think there's a lot that you can learn by learning different languages and building stuff in different languages, because some of the best stuff that we have in JavaScript is only brought over to JavaScript because people have written in other languages and have come back and be like, okay, but why don't we have this? This is really easy in these other languages, but I can't bring it over. That said, if you are looking to just double down on a language, often what I hear from people is that I'm super overwhelmed with what I should do next. Should I spend more time on JavaScript, or should I spend some more time on PHP or Python? And I think like right now, in the last couple of years, JavaScript has been exploding. There's been some really good articles coming out where I think the title of the article was, "What if JavaScript is the standard language?" Being mm-hmm. like, it's probably worth your money just to right now double down on going all in on JavaScript, because we're starting to see, if you want to write a serverless function, you have to write it likely in JavaScript. If you want to build an interactive front end for a WordPress blog, you have to build that in JavaScript. If you want to build some sort of really nice streaming service, you likely will probably build that in JavaScript. And I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear, but it's starting to seem that if you want to be very valuable in the next couple of years, I would just forget about other languages and just double down on all in JavaScript.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, I don't think you're going to regret doing that. And if it is me, like, okay, so the only reason I would pick up something like PHP or Python for me at this point is if there's some inherent reason, like there's a specific job that I want that uses it, right? That I would really need to get, you know, those skills up for a job that I'm applying for. But right now, I can do everything that I need to do in JavaScript. So taking the time to improve my JavaScript skills are only going to benefit me more in the long run. If I were to learn something else, an additional language, right, I would pick something that is like a surrounding language to the JavaScript ecosystem. Like I would learn something like Reason, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's like an OCaml. Is it an OCaml? It compiles to JavaScript. Is Reason based on OCaml, or is Reason OCaml? That's a good question.
That's a good question. I haven't really looked into that at all, but it's one of those things I keep hearing about, and it's probably one of those things I'm going to need to check out pretty soon.
Reason lets you write simple, fast, quality, type-safe code while leveraging both JavaScript and OCaml. Yeah, I know you can have JavaScript in Reason, but either way, I would learn something like a periphery to JavaScript, something that is going to be in the same community, the same world. That way, again, you're just always increasing that same sort of nucleus of skill set. So speaking of things that we want to double down on, I think CSS Grid is one of those tools and one of those skills that the more and more you emphasize and put it into your workflow, the more and more you're going to get out of it. And one way that you can get more and more out of CSS Grid is with Coffee Cup Software's CSS Grid prototyping software.
Yes. So Coffee Cup Software is their company that makes a lot of this kind of like a GUI in order to build websites. And they contacted me a couple of months ago and said, hey, we're actually releasing a CSS Grid tool, which will allow you to build CSS Grid layouts in this kind of visual editor and then be able to use a visual editor to add columns, add rows, and mess with anything that CSS Grid does. And I said, okay, well, I know a little bit about CSS Grid. I did an entire course on it, and I find it hard to believe that you can make a really nice visual tool, but I'm going to check it out, because one thing that I've learned is that CSS Grid is very hard to look at just CSS and sort of visualize it. That's why I like to use the Firefox Grid Visualizer when I use CSS Grid, because you need to be able to see exactly what is going on as you're authoring this stuff. So they came along, they launched this CSS Grid Builder tool, and you can get it at cssgrid.cc. And I had a call with them. I saw it, and I built a CSS Grid layout. And then the big thing came where it is, okay, let's export this thing and see if it's any good. And let me tell you, the code is exactly as I would author it. I think that's called Turing complete, where when a tool outputs code that is as an author, as a regular human would write it, then it starts to look really good. So I was pretty impressed with it. It gives you a really good visual overview as to what your grid looks like. You have full control over all of the different pieces of the grid, how you justify, how you align items, your columns, your rows, your named areas, whether they span from specific areas and not. So I check it out at cssgrid.cc. They also have a little CSS grid guide on there that will help you get up and running with how CSS grid works. So check it out at cssgrid.cc. Thanks so much to Coffee Cup Software for sponsoring.
Sick.
All right, next question. What do you got for me?
Next question. All right, next question is, as a computer science undergraduate at a university, what can I do in terms of programming that could benefit me greatly after graduation? This is from Mike. I like this question a lot because we often don't necessarily hear this sort of, it's sort of the classic, like, I'm in school, and what can I do to improve my job chances after? And like the historic advice would be go get a free internship somewhere or whatever and work your butt off at a job and make those contacts and connections. But the web development industry is a little bit different in that regard. I mean, you can go and get an internship. And if you have the opportunity, definitely getting your hands dirty in some real world code and some real project stuff is going to help. But if that's not an option, I think there's plenty of things in this sort of modern era that allow you to make the same sort of progress. For one, I mean, you could contribute to open source software. If you come out of college and you're looking for a job and your name is on the list and you've contributed to all these different projects, and it's just going to show that you have the initiative to work on this sort of stuff, and you know that you are the type of person who can work without somebody telling you to do this or that. I also think there's a lot of room for making connections within the industry of maybe reaching out to companies or places that you might want to work. You know, I was always very inspired by certain companies, and I would follow their stuff, and I would follow them on Twitter, and I would share their work, and I would talk about their work and stuff like that. I think making these connections and reaching out to people like that is a good idea. You can write blog posts. Again, blog posts are a great way to boost up your resume, especially, I mean, it doesn't matter if anybody reads them, but writing a blog post is going to get you thinking differently. It's going to, again, show that you have some initiative. And again, you're going to want to make stuff. I mean, make a lot of code, throw it in your GitHub. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just make stuff and show that you like working in code. And I think all of those things are going to look really good when you're at your first interview and another candidate has just graduated and didn't do any of this stuff. And here you've, you know, contributed to open source and you've shown initiative like that. So I think those are all great things that you can do to, you know, increase your stock coming out of school.
That's exactly what I did. Is I didn't necessarily contribute to open source when I was in school just because my skills were simply just not there yet. I was just way below where I could be. But I did spend time blogging about what I had learned. I did post up lots of examples. I hung out in chat rooms and I helped people a lot. It's funny, I actually just hired someone to help me work on some of my course platform stuff. And the reason why I hired him is because he was helping me. I had some questions, and every time I had a question in the chat room, he would come up and help me. And I was like, damn, this guy's good. Like, he really knows this stuff, right? And like, it just by putting yourself out there, whether that's blog posts, whether that's going to conferences and meeting people, whether that's joining in on the conversation on Twitter, contributing to open source, putting yourself out there and showing that you actually are excited about this industry and are actually putting in work is going to go a long way in terms of both increasing your skills as well as making yourself attractive to employers.
Yeah, love it.
Next question we have here is from Yannick. Is, hi guys, do you want to talk a bit about SEO? I understand React is not a good choice for when SEO matters. What would be a good JS framework to build a website for a local business? So there's a lot here. Let's sort of unpack this. SEO, search engine optimization, means that when you search for something specific, you will find the website. And traditionally, React and all of JavaScript frameworks are not a good idea for SEO because it's not server rendered, meaning that if Google crawls your website in the past, and it still is kind of up in the air whether or not it works now, Google would not actually run the JavaScript on your page. It would just take the CSS and the HTML that's on the page, render out that page really quickly and read all of the words that are on it. And then anything that gets rendered after the fact in JavaScript is kind of invisible to Googlebots. Now, there is a whole lot of evidence that Google does run JavaScript now. There's a lot of people who have showed examples of running a React just client-side and it still renders out. That said, would I bet my business on it? No way. I don't think it's nearly as stable as having a server-rendered HTML application. But that says you can now easily render your React application. Somebody the other day asked me, hey, Wes, in which episode did you talk about X, Y, or Z? And all I had to do is just Google syntax and the topic that they talked about. And the whole syntax website is built in React. It's all built in JavaScript, but it's server rendered, meaning that it gets rendered on the server. It spits out HTML so that when Google crawls it, it doesn't actually have to run any JavaScript to access all of the show notes and everything that's on that page. So server rendering is not the easiest thing in the world, especially even like I use Next.js. There's a couple other frameworks for this. It's still not the easiest thing in the world. There's a lot of like little things that you have to talk about. I think we've done some shows in the past on this, but it's definitely worth doing it. So if I were building a website for a local business, I would probably go with Next.js or something like a static site like Gatsby, or stick. If it's just a simple example, I might just stick with the existing WordPress theme. That way, you know, WordPress is kind of tried and true for SEO.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that, Scott?
Yeah. On the grounds of server-side rendering not always being easy. Yeah, I have. So like the server-side rendering for me is with Meteor and React, which isn't bad, but then you have to have GraphQL, and then you have to figure out a way for GraphQL's data to come in and be server-side rendered. And then, you know what? I'm totally hung up on code splitting with server-side rendering using dynamic imports. My dynamic imports just don't server-side render. And it's like one of those things that has just been bashing my head against the keyboard for a couple months to try to make this happen, and I don't get anywhere with it. So I can totally understand server-side rendering being difficult with these things. But again, there are services like you mentioned, like Next, that make it just super easy, or static site generators like Gatsby that make it super easy. But if all of those things don't do it for you, there's also services like prerender.io that allows your site to be fully crawled by Google as if it was just crawling static sites, but it doesn't actually require you to do anything. Pre-render just sort of crawls your page as JavaScript and outputs a static version of it that's just for search engines. So there are definitely other ways around this if those things don't work for you. I like pre-render. It's a pretty sweet service. They 19 billion pages they have server engines crawl. So they're a big heavy hitter here. Definitely something that's really cool to use. But yeah, that's pretty much my thoughts. I don't think it's too impossible to do server-side rendering with JavaScript or with React, and I think it's getting easier all the time. I don't think there's any reason why you wouldn't pick React for SEO reasons. I just that isn't a thing for me, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you really have to worry too much about that, given that you can put in the time. And maybe I should explain why it's such a problem, because let's say you have a React application and like three levels deep, you have an AJAX request. How does your application know to wait for that AJAX request to fetch the data and then to come back and then to render it to the page and then to finally spit that out? There's this whole asynchronous nature to JavaScript, whereas a lot of server-side only languages like PHP are very synchronous. They read top to bottom, so they only export the data at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's tough stuff. All right, so I've just stood up at my standing desk, so you know things are getting serious here. the next question we have coming in is from this is from Tom. And this one, I think, goes kind of nicely along with the college student one in a certain kind of way. They say, soft skills question, how can I build my network when I'm a grumpy old man? And then in parentheses, by industry standards, anyways, I totally get that. Who is tired by the end of the workday and would rather go home to dinner with the spouse than go to a meetup event? Yeah, this resonates with me as someone with a one-year-old, because I don't, you know, want to go to meetups all the time, and I don't want to work past 5 o'clock anymore, and I want to just do the 9 to 5 thing, check in, check out. But I also want to make excellent things, constantly improve, network, and do all that stuff. So this answer is in two parts. One part is that you need to make that sort of maybe a priority at some time in your workday. It doesn't have to be long. You can take like, you know, 10, 20 minutes out of your workday and do some digital marketing, digital networking, right? Where you're connecting with other people on chat groups or something like that. I think Slack groups or Spectrum channels are a great way to sort of meet other developers and improve that network. There is a Level Up Tuts Slack room, again, where a bunch of people hang out and talk about code. So like that kind of stuff is a great way that you can, you know, improve your network by meeting other developers who are also working on this stuff without having to like take time after work or something like that. I think there's just so much networking that you can do digitally. I mean, for instance, Wes and I did not meet in person.
Somebody tweeted the other day, I would love to hang out with you and Scott. I was like, that's funny because I've never hung out with Scott before.
Yeah, I think that people are most surprised when they hear that. We have never met in person. We have only hung out online or in chat rooms or Slack rooms or webcams or whatever. But you can do that much networking. I mean, we've networked to the point where we have a podcast for a year and we've worked on projects and we've done all sorts of cool stuff, right? But like, this all just happened because of digital networking, which is something you can certainly do via Twitter, Slack, or GitHub or anything. Just build those connections, and you don't have to take your whole day. You can take 5-10 minutes here and there, whatever, you know, take some time out and just say, hey, I'm actually going to connect with some people that I either, you know, admire or like-minded or whatever. And that way you can continue to grow your network and just work on it. Now, again, the second part to this is maybe pick one meetup a month and just go to it. Because there is a nice thing about being in this natural energy of this room where people are learning things and they're teaching things and whatever. And I don't have time personally to go to a meetup every week. But I can make time to pick one meetup a month. I go to the React Denver meetup, and I love going to that particular meetup, even though most nights I would be like, I can't do this. You know, there's too much other stuff to do. But one a month is not a huge commitment, I don't think. And I think it's something that is kind of important to get out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm a huge proponent of just working your 9 to 5, especially like now I've got kids. I don't really want to leave. I don't want to leave my wife with our bratty kids that are put them to bed by herself and all that stuff. So I don't even like going to conferences all that much. And what happens every single time that I have a conference or a meetup before, I'm like, I don't want to go. And then I go and then I come back and I'm like, oh, that was amazing. Like, I feel like re-energized. I'm all excited again.
It's like going to the gym.
Yeah, I'm all excited. It's true. You never want to go to the gym. Then you actually go and you go and you meet some really cool people. You talk about some stuff. You learn a whole bunch of stuff. You get different people's opinions on stuff. So big fan of doing Slack rooms and just kind of being online all day and kind of the water cool conversation. But it's definitely worth once a month, once every 2 months going out to some sort of meetup conference and getting to know it. But I totally feel you on there where I'm not as young as I used to be. I used to love to go to these things all the time, as many as I possibly could. And now I just rather like sit home and water my lawn and drink a beer with my wife, you know?
Yep. I'm right there with you.
All right. Next one. This is a question for Wes. Oh, I'm glad I picked this one because it's for me. I have taken your React course and JavaScript 30 course. How do you come up with such good designs and UI? So first of all, thank you. If you go back and listen to like our origin stories, I think way back, let me go real quick, find the episode number. Episode 7 is Scott's origin story and episode 8 is my origin story. And we sort of detail like how we got to where we are. And before as I got into coding, I was actually spending a lot of more of my time in Photoshop and designing stuff. So I do have a bit of a design background before I got heavy into coding. But I think really where my design started to get much better is is when I was working the whole PSD to WordPress scene for a long time, where I would work with designers, they would give me a Photoshop file, or I guess these days it would be a sketch file or a Figma file or something like that. And then I would try to convert that pixel for pixel to HTML and CSS. And that both makes you a really good developer because you have to learn how to do all of these different things in CSS. But it also forces you to pay attention to things that you might not have necessarily realized before. Things like letter spacing and things like padding and margin and specific colors and the way that fonts work together. And all of, there's a lot of like these like little things and that make a design good that you can pretty much just like have a list of these are 20 things that make a good design. And if I follow all of these 20 rules, then your stuff is going to look 80% of the way there. And then there's a whole creative aspect to it. I always like to take something that is like new to CSS, like a clip path or a bunch of patterns or multiple background patterns or multiple background images. I like to use all of those things because I know what's new and cutting edge in CSS, but I also know what's good and what looks good. So really that's how I got good at it. I've been doing it for 10 years now. I do feel like my stuff has gotten a lot better. And I do feel in the last like 3 or 4 years, I've sort of hit my stride in terms of having my own style. Previously before that, it was a lot of mimicking other people's style. And now I've sort of hit my stride with my own.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to practice. I mean, the amount of time you've put into it, and you have good taste. And like you said, you're mimicking a lot of that good taste, and eventually your taste and your work combine to form this unique style and actual skills. Definitely something I wish I put more time into, to be honest. I'm getting there, but I'm not there.
Totally. I have one more thing to add to that is a lot of my design stuff is also very simple. I feel like an area where I could get much better at design is when your application gets complicated and you need to convey information and make a good user experience based on a design. That's a whole nother level of design. Is it doesn't just look good, but it is a joy to use this product. And that's where a lot of these top shelf developers start to shine, where they can make something enjoyable to use because of not how it looks, but how you interact with the product.
Yeah.
That's kind of my next step.
Nice. You know what? There's one aspect of design, and specifically web design, that I've always been terrible at, is body copy. Like, not like paragraphs and paragraphs of an article, but like, hey, yeah, I just have a single paragraph. Like, I get the line letter spacing. I get the vertical rhythm aspect of it. I get the font size. I just don't make it look good for some reason. it's like a curse. But okay. We have one more, and then we're gonna take a break for another sponsor. This is Ryan Rote. And Ryan Rote asks, as more web moves to secure connections with progressive web apps, .app, etc., where can a noob learn the basics of HTTPS, SSL certificates, services like Let's Encrypt, and how to deploy a secure website? And this is going to be a good resource, I think, in general for this kind of stuff. But I would follow Troy Hunt, who created the site Have I Been Pwned? He's very, very security focused. Yeah. And so his Twitter feed ends up becoming like a great, anytime an excellent article about anything security comes up, it's basically on his Twitter feed. His blog is great. He does a lot of courses for Pluralsight. So I would recommend checking out some of his courses, like Introduction to Browser Security Headers, stuff like that. So he is a really good follow and a great person to check out their courses because as far as security goes, he's definitely up there.
Yeah, I think that's who I follow as well to get a lot of the stuff. I do see a lot of the little tips on Twitter and things that will come your way. One other thing I think of in terms of this HTTPS and SSL, and like, I think that it's so bizarre to me that it's so hard still to do SSL properly. I know that there's Let's Encrypt and it's for free, but you still have to get into your server and assign the certificates and make sure that you set up a cron job to have them renew. And you have to understand like how, if you have an Nginx server in front of it that stuff. And I think that this stuff is going to not be your problem pretty soon. And it already is. If you use Netlify, Zeitz now,
Meteor Galaxy does it for
GitHub.
You.
Yeah, a lot of these like services where you do pay a little bit extra per month for this, they will handle all of that SSL provisioning, all that stuff for you. And then you can also just use a Cloudflare, where if you use Cloudflare as a DNS provider, and what that means is that let's say you buy a domain name at hover.com. Usually what happens is that you go to Hover and you point your name servers to your hosting company. And what you do instead is that you point your name servers to Cloudflare, and then Cloudflare will point what's called A records towards your hosting company. And then Cloudflare will sort of sit in between your server and your visitors, and it will sort of proxy the traffic. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that they do. They do DDoS mitigation, and they allow you to block certain countries, and they allow you to cache a bunch of files, and there's tons of stuff that they do. But probably the reason a lot of people use them is because they provide free HTTPS certificates. So you can just turn this on, and that will put a HTTPS certificate on yours. The only thing that is a gotcha, I do use Cloudflare on all of mine, but if you ever have to temporarily turn off Cloudflare, it's called gray clouding it, then your HTTPS will break, because if you turn it off, there's no certificate, right? So I still do put a Let's Encrypt on all of my sites. And then I also use Cloudflare as a secondary level of security. And I use it for a couple other reasons.
Yeah. I don't know. The SSL stuff, like you said, it's still not as much fun as it should be, but it's getting there.
Yeah. I think pretty soon what's going to happen is that, and this is already happening with things like Caddy server, where your server will handle that for you, rather than you have to worry about SSL certificates and signing them and provisioning them and all that. You just use something like a Caddy server, where Caddy is like a replacement for Apache or Nginx, and it handles it for you. And I believe a future version of Nginx will also do this, where it will just provision the certificate and handle it all for you. Because I just don't understand, why do we have to do this as developers? Shouldn't it just be handled
free
automatically?
Yeah.
Because stuff is going to rot. If you leave a website for 3 years and don't touch it, you used to be able to go back to old websites and you could view them from 15 years ago. And now if you leave a website for a year and you forget to renew the certificate, the thing is busted.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for that day where it's turnkey, super easy, 24/7. Okay, so think of other things that are turnkey, easy, 24/7. I think of FreshBooks, which is amazing cloud accounting software that Wes and I both use for our personal and business accounting.
Let me just open up.
Yeah.
How'd you
like that one? That was a good one.
Beautiful segue. We actually got a little note from one of our sponsors that they really like how we just put these sponsors in and segue them in and kind of talk through it rather than have a formal pre-recorded thing. But so FreshBooks is going to allow you to track your hours, format your estimates, work out your taxes, capture your expenses, chase late payments, prepare invoices, submit proposals. All of that stuff, when you're a freelancer, that is all known as paperwork. And the good news about that is that FreshBooks has created a ridiculously easy cloud accounting software for freelancers, for small business owners, that will tackle all of those problems and solve all of those problems for you. So I really like FreshBooks. I've been using FreshBooks for something like 10 years or something. FreshBooks is a local company to where I live. And I have a lot of friends that work there. And I just am such a big fan of the company, because if I need to send out an invoice, you need to get paid for one of the sponsorship spots on this podcast, you just jump in, you add the details to it. The new FreshBooks is even faster. You used to have to create a customer and then create an invoice, but you can just create an invoice and create the customer at the exact same time. So I'm just so in love with FreshBooks for managing that, the part of running a business that sucks. I hate doing all of this stuff, and FreshBooks makes it super easy. So head to freshbooks.com/syntax and enter syntax into the how did you hear about us section. Thanks so much to FreshBooks for sponsoring.
Thank you. All right. Do you want to hit a couple more of these and then get into sick picks or?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got one right here.
Yeah.
From Max. Have you had experience working in big enterprises, also ones that don't focus on tech primarily? If so, would you consider working for such companies just as fun as a smaller team, or even compared to freelancing? So I like this question, because Scott and I, we're running our own business. We're small, we're lean, we're doing all kinds of stuff. Whereas I know a lot of you that work for this podcast, work for huge companies that have thousands and thousands of employees, and there's many different departments that work on the website. And I often will hear, it must be nice that you can like be able to jump between all these technologies so quickly, or it must be nice that you can just use SaaS. Like, it took us 3 years to get Less implemented, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it has changed. So can it be as fun? Absolutely, I think so. I think it really depends on company culture and values in that. And what I have seen also, like one good example is gov.uk. So the government of all people in the UK, you would think the government is slow and stodgy and hard to work with. They are like one of the forerunners in creating good online experiences. And they have an amazing team that works on their websites and their design and all of the different properties that they have. And it seems to be like, compared to, I guess, working with online Canadian stuff, is just a joy to use any of the UK government websites. So that's, I think that's a really cool example. There's another one here in Canada. We have a really big telecom company called TELUS, and they really needed to, I think maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, they needed to like revamp their entire online presence, and they needed to just move really quickly outside of the kind of the all of the stuff that a big company sort of mm-hmm. drags you down with. So they essentially just created another company that was inside of the company, and that allowed them to just work as quickly as they can. They had like permission from the high ups there to basically say, like, somebody told me that they have permission to tell anyone higher up to F off, which is hilarious.
That's awesome.
Because like this is a technology company, and if you're being held back by your technology, then that's not a good place. And that's how big companies fail, right? So I think it really depends on who is in the company and company culture. And I think that's definitely something that can change. And I know a lot of people have a really nice team inside of a big company, and they really enjoy their team. I meet a lot of them at conferences. You don't necessarily hear about them online, but they're doing really cool work internally.
Yeah. Well, when I worked for a company that was at the time called Team Detroit. I think it's called GTB or something. I changed the name, and I don't understand it. But they are Ford's main advertising agency, and they handle all of Ford's web work. So we were building prototypes for Ford, and I was a part of a team that was maybe like 40 people, where we had some designers, some UX experts, some project managers, some developers, and everyone was sort of working in this very like tight-knit team to build these design prototypes, of which Ford looked at and said, hey, these are too progressive for us. But the work was just so much fun, and the team was so energized by the work. So this was a big, big company, a big, big project. But again, like you said, the company culture and the team culture is really what made this project, not the fact that it's a big project with a lot of people on it. But the fact that we had a system for how we did everything, we had a system for communicating and working together, and everyone was open-minded and excited to be there. So because of that, it was definitely a fun project and exciting, and all those good things that you don't think of when you think of this giant monolithic company, right? So again, a company culture, how everyone is working together, workflow and all that sort of stuff, it makes or breaks it. Because if you are sitting in a cubicle by yourself, pushing commits and not talking to anyone and not having like a good time, you know, that's got to be no fun on a giant old project, right? Okay, so last one here. I thought we'd end it off with something kind of fun, something that we've talked a little bit about before. But what are programming podcasts you guys listen to?
Yeah, why don't you kick off? Tell us, other than Syntax, of course.
I don't listen to any programming podcasts other than Syntax, which is why I wanted to answer this. Yeah, I do listen to Syntax. I listen to every episode after it releases. But
I do too. I like to listen to the podcast and see how you can get better and how you've explained things. I think it helps me become better at doing this.
Yeah, I do too. No, I actually take that back. I don't listen to any like obsessively, but I do listen to, what is this one right here? The GraphQL Radio. I listen to that. There's not a ton of episodes, but GraphQL Radio is great for just talking to people who are really using GraphQL in actual production environments and how they're using it. I listen to a podcast called Smashing Security, which is not necessarily about technical stuff, but more or less about web security as a whole. It's not like, here's how to do this or that. It's more like, here is some news that happened in sort of things surrounding privacy and web security. I also listen occasionally to a podcast called Test Talks. It's about testing. And I listen to that one whenever I feel like I'm have the energy to listen to a podcast about testing because, you know, some people can't even get the energy to do testing itself, let alone listen to a podcast about testing. But for the most part, yeah, no technical stuff, I guess. Other than that, I listen to a lot of sports podcasts because it's sort of like mindless for me. I listen to a lot of hockey podcasts, pretty much like any major hockey podcast that exists. I'm listening to, which is hilarious because Wes is the Canadian of the group. yeah, and other than that, it's sort of random stuff. I listen to a podcast called Last Podcast on the Left, which is like sort of macabre and dark stories. These guys are, it's this podcast is not for everyone. It's sort of like true crime and definitely a little rough stuff in that podcast, but it's actually really hilarious. They have some stand-up comedians and stuff on there, and I don't know, I listen to a lot of random stuff, but not a ton of tech podcasts.
Yeah, me too. I think that's the reason why we started this podcast, is that I didn't like a lot of the tech podcasts. I found them kind of exhausting to listen to. I found them very dry and slow and poorly recorded, and there of course is lots of exceptions to that, but I think a big motivation for starting Syntax was that there is nothing that is kind of like the water cooler. It's kind of a bit more fun. Hopefully you find this podcast a little bit more fun and entertaining and a little bit more applicable. And that's also a reason why we don't necessarily have interviews on this podcast as well, is because, I don't know, sometimes you get a lot of these podcasts with interviews and the person who you're interviewing is not totally comfortable with it, and the sound quality is always terrible. They're talking from inside of a fishbowl or something like that. But that said, I do listen to a couple tech podcasts. CodePen Radio is one of my favorites, and I've been listening to that one for years, and they go through it, just everything behind running CodePen, and they often talk about the different technical challenges behind running CodePen and different features and how it's built and how they work on teams and how they do partnerships. Big fan of that one. I also listen to Chris Coyer's other podcast, Shop Talk Show. I really like that one as well. I've been listening to that one for years. Every now and then I listen to Full Stack Radio from Adam Wathen. That one's pretty good. He's a fellow Canadian. JS Party is a pretty good one as well. I don't listen to it all the time, but if I have some, I have got a huge list. I need to do podcast bankruptcy because they're all just kind of coming
accumulating,
in.
Yeah.
I just listen to more business podcasts and more interesting ones. Oh, Under the Radar. That's from Marco Arment. He's an iOS developer, but I just find his take on programming in general and managing projects to be very refreshing. Tools Day is a really nice one. It's from Una and Chris, and they basically once a week they talk about different tools and different things related to programming. I find that one very refreshing. I like that one. And other than that, I think that's about it.
What's your favorite business podcast?
Oh, favorite business podcast? A couple. The Indie Hackers one, which I've been on myself. That's from Cortland. He is working for Stripe now. So actually, the podcast comes from Stripe. But he asks really good questions and not like the typical. There's a lot of business podcasts out there that are very fluffy and are very unmotivational.
Yeah, you can tell they got their content from some other business podcast and are just repackaging it.
The people that are on it are just there to plug something, whereas Indie Hackers actually gets into the whys and the hows of business. Mixergy, I haven't listened to that one ever since I stopped driving to Toronto. I haven't been listening to that one because it's a big podcast, but I like that one. Startups for the Rest of Us is from the founder of Drip, as well as Mike, I think it's Mike Tabor, who runs, I forget the name of the business. Anyways, that's a good one for both business and solving technical hurdles. I always like hearing just how these different businesses solve problems that I don't necessarily run into, like database sharding and things like that. That's not something I've ever run into, but it's nice to know what is database sharding and why would you ever run into these problems? And I don't know, that's it for now. I'll post a list at some point of all the podcasts I'm subscribed to. There's a couple dozen in here.
Yeah, I should keep like an up-to-date list. It'd be nice if you could sync that out of Pocket Cast or something. That's just a straight-up list.
Yeah. Oh, Jeffrey Way has like a nice little podcast called the Laracast Snippet. And he's just got a really good view on life, I think. And he often will just take a specific thing, like whether it's social media addiction or mantras in programming. And he'll just like be like, hey, everyone, calm down about this. It's not that big of a deal. And here's why I think it.
Nice.
So big fan of that one. It's nice and short, too.
Cool. I like all those. Like lots of podcasts. If there are things that you really like out there podcasting that we didn't mention, stuff that you find interesting, business, programming, otherwise, and hit us up with what these podcasts are, especially if they're maybe not as mainstream of ones that we've probably seen and heard of 1,000 times before. We'd love to hear what podcast you are listening to as well. Cool. So that is it for this potluck. Everything has been real tasty here. So I hope you enjoyed these tasty treats. The dishes are done. Yeah, the dishes are done. The tablecloth has been packed up. We're ready to go. What kind of sick pick do you have to take with you at the end of this potluck? Man.
Do I have a sick pick for you today? So a couple of weeks ago, a couple of buddies of mine got together in the park and they said, we're going to play spike ball. And I was like, that sounds dumb. What is that? And so what it is, it's like you get this little trampoline, like it's like a mini trampoline and it has like a net in it. And you get a ball and you have four people and one other person's on your team. So 2-on-2. And it's kind of like volleyball where you serve the ball into the net and it bounces out. And then the other team has three hits like volleyball to hit it back into the net and back to your side. And then you have three hits to hit it back. And what you try to do is you try to like spike it so that they can't get to the ball in time, or you try to hit it lightly so it falls off and they have to dive for it. And man, I haven't had that much fun in so long. It was so cool. And I don't know if it's a knockoff version or whatever, but I ordered it from Amazon and it's called Slammo. It seems to be about $50 cheaper. So I ordered that up and I'm really excited for the summer to be playing spike ball or Slammo with all my friends.
Nice. So it's hilarious because I saw this, like my parents love Shark Tank. I don't watch Shark Tank, but my parents love Shark Tank. So whenever they're in town or we're at their house, we're watching Shark Tank. And yeah. I just happened to catch the episode where this was on Shark Tank. And I remember thinking, wow, that looks really fun. I bet people in Denver would love this thing. And it was like almost like 2 weeks later, I was walking in Wash Park, which is one of the big parks here. And there was like three people, like three separate games of this going on. And I was just thinking, yep. That looks about right, you know. So it looks a lot of fun at first. You know, when they say that they're trying to invent a new game, you know, that I think there's like a level of eye rolling that comes along with it. But it looks like a total blast, man. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how much fun it was. And it's definitely that kind of like beer league kind of game where you and your buddies go play Slammo in the park for a couple hours, and then you go Slammo a couple beers afterwards.
Slammo. Nice. Love it. So my sick pick today is going to be a YouTube channel. And this is a channel that might be sort of odd for some people who don't know anything about dance. This is called Stance. Stance is a YouTube channel that they publish pretty much every single major breakdancing competition, the like high quality, high production video. And these guys started this out of nowhere. It was just like a bunch of dudes bringing their cameras to b-boy battles, a low sort of production, and have just really grown the channel to a place where they are sort of the people to film a lot of this stuff. So this is like the record for a lot of these competitions. But some of the cool things that they really do is like the video, like the very first video on their page is Monster Moments at Freestyle Session 20th Anniversary, where they put together these compilations of the craziest stuff from that competition. So even if you're not into watching a breakdancing competition, just put on one of these compilations and proceed to have your mind blown, because these people are the best in the world at what they do. So I love this channel. Anytime anything pops up, I'm watching it. And so if you're interested at all in dance or human movement or anything like that, I check out the Stance YouTube channel. I love to give some credit to these guys because they have really put in the work on this thing and it's awesome.
Wicked.
Yeah.
What about shameless plugs? Any shameless plugs today?
Yeah, I released an intermediate React course called Level 2 React a couple weeks ago. And this course covers everything from render props to portals to understanding and how to use those technologies, the context API. We do some real sweet animation in it where we're doing the Tinder interface dragging, where you're doing with physics-based animation using a library called React Spring, which gives you an absolute ton of configuration, a ton of flexibility. So we go over how you can do things like interpolating rotation values from X dragging values, and I step it all up to make it really nice and easy so that you can build some really fantastic, really modern interface stuff without having any prior knowledge ahead of time. So if you're interested in learning intermediate React concepts, head on over to leveluptutorials.com/store and purchase Level 2 React, or you can become a Level Up Pro subscriber and get access to everything on leveluptutorials.com.
Wicked. I'm going to just plug my courses in general. Go to westboss.com/courses if you want to learn anything about React or ES6 or Node, or just get better at vanilla JavaScript. And pretty soon I'm going to have an advanced React course, and I'm going to be working on a beginner JavaScript course likely after that. I'm really excited about that. So check it out at westboss.com/courses and learn something today.
Sick. Sick, 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 sick.
All right. I think that's it. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. And as always, check out this episode's show notes for the link to the potluck question form, so that you can submit your questions if you would like to hear them on the next potluck episode, where we're going to be doing one of these a month. So because we get so many questions that we have to do one a month, or else we're going to be totally backlogged forever. So one a month, potluck episodes. Head on over to the course notes the episode notes
and show notes
and get that form and let us know what kind of questions you have, tech or business or soft or any of that kind of stuff. We'd love to hear them.
Yeah, we should do another business one again. So ask us your business questions.
Yeah, we'll do a business episode real quick.
Hashtag business. All right. Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.